This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello, welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Douglas Mpuga, and here is what's coming up.
It was quite a circus yesterday, and today it's almost as if it never happened.
That's VOA New York correspondent Tina Trin describing the city a day after former President Donald Trump appeared in court. Also, some analysts say Trump may face more court cases, and Libya considers a new path towards elections. All this and more coming up on Africa News Tonight. Former U.S. President Donald Trump was in New York yesterday, where he pleaded not guilty to felony charges of falsifying business records. There was heavy security and protesters in support of and against the 45th president. For updates on the situation there today, I reached VOA's Tina Trin.
Yes, it feels very much back to normal. It is quite a contrast from yesterday, where you saw throngs of media, onlookers, spectators, protesters, and just it's police. It was quite a circus yesterday, and today it's almost as if it never happened. But of course, we know now that there are 34 counts in this indictment against the U.S. former President Donald Trump.
Now that the charges are known, any reaction there on the charges themselves and Trump's reaction last night?
Yes, well, Manhattan DA Alvin Bragg gave a statement yesterday saying that Donald Trump must be held accountable to the same laws that any other citizen in the city would be held to account for. And Donald Trump traveled back to Florida to his Mar-a-Lago resort and held a rally where he denounced all of the charges and was notably angry and just saying that he was a victim of political persecution and that these charges are outrageous. And so really much more strong, angry denouncement from Trump, which is notable because when he was actually in the courtroom in New York, he was quiet. Reports are saying that he was rather sullen, and it was a very sobering moment being in the courtroom. So quite a contrast from the version of the Donald Trump that we saw last night in front of supporters.
The DA did give a press briefing yesterday and took some questions. Did his briefing clarify any issues that people may have had lingering over the charges?
Not so much in terms of how these amount to what specific criminal felonies these charges count to beyond the falsifying business records. So each of the 34 counts are for falsifying business records in the first degree with intent to defraud and intent to commit another crime and aid and conceal the commission thereof. So the counts are all identical in terms of falsifying business records. And there are receipts, as you would say, proving such that these actions did take place. In terms of the specific crimes, there was no further specification.
That was VOA's Tina Trin. I reached her in New York City. We spoke to some people on the African continent for their thoughts on this history-making case. In Port Harcourt, Nigeria, teacher Victoria says Trump's indictment is important for democracies.
My view about this is that it just shows how democracy is, and it shows how important democracy is. So it's a government that is for the people, that airs out the people's mind. And so it shows that no one is above the law, because whosoever has offended should be punished for it. It's part of, at least we have three arms of government, it's part of the duties of the judiciary.
Alex Amuga is a student at the University of Nairobi, and he thinks the case sets a good example.
I think it's a really, really great example America's put out there for other countries to follow. Because, I mean, if you can take such a high-ranking former official in the government to court, I mean, that shows true justice. That means anybody in America whatsoever, no matter your rank, you still can go to court. If he's guilty, then let him be prosecuted as the law. According to the law, the United States is a pacemaker. It's quite ahead in terms of democracy and how they have shaped their democracy.
However, in Johannesburg, Michael Nzuza, who says he follows politics, has doubts about the case.
I don't think that this hush money payment is something that's worth a criminal case or criminal prosecution. Just pleading to a minor misdemeanor would be fine. I feel like it's been blown out of proportion, and it feels very politically motivated. And I think the Democrats or the left wing, they're trying by all means to put the screws on Trump. The end goal is obviously to prevent him from campaigning for 2024 presidential election.
Also in Johannesburg, Senzo Nkuna says he's an aspiring politician. He thinks the charges against Donald Trump are a political attack.
The U.S. Congress doesn't like Trump. They never did like him during his presidency, and I doubt they like him now. So there is a chance that they could come up with just anything they can pin on Donald Trump just to see him go to jail. There is that risk. And then with his sexual relationship with the porn star, well, first of all, the question that should be asked is it illegal to have any relations with a porn star or anybody for that matter?
After pleading not guilty to charges in a Manhattan courtroom Tuesday, former U.S. President Donald Trump flew back to his Mar-a-Lago estate in Florida. In front of supporters, Trump lashed out at the New York prosecutor and the judge in the case against him. As Carol Van Damme reports from Washington, the former president faces multiple legal challenges.
This fake case was brought only to interfere with the upcoming 2024 election, and it should be dropped immediately.
That was former U.S. President Donald Trump speaking Tuesday to supporters in Florida after he was arraigned in New York City court. Trump says he has not broken any laws and that the 34 charges against him are politically motivated, as he is a leading Republican Party candidate for the 2024 presidential election. A grand jury charged Trump with 34 offenses linked to his payoffs of two women with whom he allegedly had affairs. The charges say the payoffs were intended to illegally influence the 2016 presidential election by suppressing what could be viewed as negative information. Alan Lichtman, who teaches American history at American University in Washington, says although some commentators have characterized the New York charges as flimsy, they are far from trivial.
This was kind of the first maneuver back in 2016 that Trump made to illegally try to seize and keep power. A lot of these other things flowed from that.
Lichtman notes that Trump faces other serious investigations, including two by the U.S. Justice Department. One focuses on alleged efforts by Trump and his allies to overturn the results of the 2020 election. The other focuses on classified documents Trump retained after leaving office. Todd Belt is a professor of political management at George Washington University. He says if Trump faces more severe charges, such as tax fraud or election tampering charges, or charges connected to the January 6th insurrection, it could make it more difficult for his supporters to say all of the charges against him are politically motivated. Despite Tuesday's arraignment in New York, Belt says Trump remains the GOP presidential front runner. Belt says hauling Trump before a judge in New York has only rejuvenated his base. The question now is, will the momentum he gained be enough to sustain him in the 2024 presidential race?
No, but Donald Trump knows he can always do something else to punch it back up again. He always has.
Alan Lichtman says the principle of no one is above the law stands for all democracies worldwide.
We cannot have one law for the ruler and another for the ruled. If that understanding is lost, the American democratic experiment and the freedom it guarantees is in jeopardy.
Trump took to Twitter on Wednesday to call on his fellow Republicans in Congress to slash funding for the U.S. Justice Department and the Federal Bureau of Investigation. Republicans in the past have supported robust funding for law enforcement and have criticized proposals from some in the Democratic Party in recent years to cut funding for local police departments. During his presidency, Trump backed spending increases for the Justice Department and the FBI. Carol Van Dam for VOA News, Washington.
The UN Security Council support for Nigerian authorities say gunmen abducted at least 10 students in northwest Kaduna State Monday. The Associated Press says attackers took students attending the government secondary school. The news service says more than 1,000 students were kidnapped from schools in the northwest and north central regions of Nigeria in 2020 and 2021. It says, however, that attacks have dropped in the past year as the military uncovers the hideouts of armed groups that often target remote communities. Most of the gunmen are thought to be young ethnic Fulani men and semi-nomadic herders in conflict with communities over land and water. A UN Security Council is supporting a plan by the UN envoy to Libya to form a high-level panel for elections. The plan by Ambassador Abdullahi Bathile has been released to the country's House of Representatives and the High Council of State for their approval. The plan provides for elections, but both Libyan institutions rushed to submit a constitution amendment instead. They are now working on finalizing election laws through a joint committee in a bid to head off Bathile's plan. William Lawrence, professor of political science at the American University in Washington, discussed the development with VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawi.
I think more than anything else, especially at this time, it has to do with the Russian presidency of the Security Council. Russia wants to show that it's willing to make peace outside of the Ukrainian context and even inside the Ukrainian context on its own terms. The UN representative stated that he would be highlighting Western failures in Libya, Yemen, and Syria at this time. Russia wants to advance the Chinese plan for Ukraine, and it wants to show that it has the best, you know, version of moves towards peace in all of these conflicts than anyone else. It doesn't have to commit to anything by envoy Bathily simply forming a panel. Now, many of the Libya analysts are saying that this panel is doomed to failure. But if we dig a bit deeper into what's going on, Bathily's plan is not perfect, but it has a better shot of succeeding. We don't have many details yet. So either it will be improved or it'll go the way of previous plans. If you look at what the countries want, Russia wants access to Libya, access to the Mediterranean, wants to move beyond Syria in terms of its Middle Eastern, North African, and Mediterranean presence, which is very different from what France wants. France wants regional stability, reduced migration, and a counterweight to Islamism. Neither Russia nor France are doing anything significant to promote democracy or development in Libya. So those goals will have to be reached by other outside powers helping Libya than France or Russia. But what needs to be solved, everyone knows. We need to know who can be a candidate for what jobs, under what constitutional basis, and these jobs will have exactly what powers. And in Libya, we've had continual democracy since 2011 in the West. They're still having municipal elections every year. We have no democracy in the East since 2014. So there's also the question of, do elections in the East mean sort of pre-selection of who will win? And that seems to be what Haftar and the other Eastern leaders want. They want so-called elections that sort of give their candidates power. The problem is that they have a numerical disadvantage. Only about a quarter of Libyans live in the East, which is why they wanted this larger role for their current Eastern Prime Minister, Bashagha. But they can't really win a fair national election, which is why they want to pre-cook the results. So within that context, the Batili initiative is a positive step forward. It's a surprise that the Russians allowed it. It could lead towards a more democratic outcome than the current situation. And Batili deserves credit. But what ends up happening depends on a lot more than agreeing to a panel.
As the statement directly provides for elections, it was disappointing for both the House of Representatives and the High Council of State, and they rushed to submit a constitutional amendment, and they are now working on finalizing election laws through a joint committee in a bid to abort Batili's plan. How could that derail the UN initiative?
By preempting it, but it probably won't happen. You know, everyone always says in Africa, African solutions, African problems. And in Libya, they say Libyan solutions to Libya problems. But if the Libyans were able to do all this on their own, then we wouldn't even be having the current situation. If Libyans really wanted to push all the outsiders out, they could. So these two institutions are more part of the problem than part of the solution. They're not really empowered by the Libyan electorate, which wants to get rid of both. They're empowered by the 2015 Libyan political agreement. But to get to a democratic outcome, all roads are valid. And if the UN action now prompts the two houses to come together, that's fine. Then what would happen would be the high panel could become a facilitator of elections under rules agreed by the two houses, as long as they're actually moving forward to free and fair elections. But, you know, anything the Libyans solve on their own without the UN solving it is okay, as long as we don't have a derailment like we did in December 2021. Now, the previous elections were derailed in large part because the warlord of the East was running Haftar and the former dictator's son was running Saif al-Islam. The best outcome would be a clean slate of politicians that aren't tainted by this history.
That was William Lawrence, professor of political science at the American University in Washington. He was speaking with VOA senior analyst Mohamed Al-Shanawi.
VOA Africa is your trusted source for news, sports, entertainment, and music. Stay engaged with VOA Africa. We love to hear your voice. You can call us 24/7 on WhatsApp and leave a message. Leave comments, requests, or greetings. We may play your message on VOA Africa. Dial the international code +1, then 202-258-3076. VOA Africa is always happy to hear your voice. The number again is the international code +1, then 202-258-3076.
Time magazine recently published its list of the world's greatest places to visit in 2023. It includes destinations from 50 countries, including Freetown Peninsula in Sierra Leone. But what does this mean for the country that has gone through many challenges in recent years? Eric Kawa reports from Freetown.
Located on the west coast of Africa, Sierra Leone is a country with many tourist attractions. According to the Time magazine, they include diverse wildlife, world-class surfing waves, and the lively Freetown Peninsula, which the publication calls the new coastal hub. In 2017, CNN also listed the waterway and village near the capital called River No. 2 Beach as among the best in Africa. What does it mean to have the Freetown Peninsula as one of the greatest places to visit in 2023? Nikki Spencer-Coker is a Sierra Leonean lawyer and activist who's passionate about tourism.
The beaches are absolutely beautiful, some of the most beautiful beaches in the world. And I've been to beaches in a lot of different places. And so I think I definitely can attest to the fact that our beaches are beachfront and our peninsula is truly beautiful, not just the beaches, the white sands, the beautiful water, great for surfing, but the greenery, the forests that line it.
Freetown was established as a haven for liberated Africans from the transatlantic slave trade. Today, the country boasts many tourist attractions, including Utamba Kilimi National Park, Takugama Chimpanzee Sanctuary, Warawara, and the Loma Mountains, among other great destinations. Abimbola Carroll is the founder and CEO of Visit Sierra Leone, a destination management company based in Freetown.
It's great news for the tourism industry, but beyond that, for Sierra Leone in general. I mean, you would agree that any investment, tourism or otherwise, can only thrive, exist and thrive in an environment that's safe, stable, friendly, and progressive. So I'm sure this will serve as an energy boost for players in the industry, and it's also a reaffirmation that things are indeed moving in the right direction.
Despite challenges like the 11-year civil war that ended in 2002, Ebola in 2014, and the recent COVID outbreak, Sierra Leone keeps rising from the ashes. Spencer Coker says that with more efforts, a boost in domestic and international tourism can open doors to more travelers.
And what can be done to increase tourism, especially the domestic tourism in the country, for international travelers, it's definitely the high price of tickets coming into the country perhaps may be a turnoff. And I think that's one thing the government is really looking into, to see what can be done to ensure that, you know, ticket prices to the country are not so high, for example, so they're comparable to places like tourist attractions like the Gambia.
There's now a government scheme to give citizenship to those in the diaspora who, through DNA testing, can trace their heritage back to Sierra Leone. This, Abimbola says, serves as a strategy to market the country to the world.
I must say that the current minister, Honorable Memuna Tupcat, has been the powerhouse behind a lot of the reform and improvements that the industry has experienced. For instance, with support from the World Bank through the Sierra Leone Economic Diversification Project, the Ministry of Tourism and the National Tourist Board, they've been able to develop a new marketing strategy for Sierra Leone tourism, which is currently being implemented. She's also led the visa on arrival, which is now possible in Sierra Leone. And we've just recently launched an e-visa platform as well.
According to statistics from the National Tourist Board Sierra Leone, the tourism sector accounts for almost 8.6% of the country's GDP. Other African countries in the Time magazine's article include the pyramids of Egypt, Volcanoes National Park in Musanze, Rwanda, and Dakar, considered the fashion capital of Senegal. It also includes what the magazine calls the budding natural metropolis of Rabat, Morocco, Loango National Park in Gabon, and the wildlife oases of Kenya. For VOA Africa, I am Eric Kawa reporting. VOA.
On VOA Africa Radio, we let the sound tell you the story. News, sports, science, and entertainment available to you 24/7. Tune in on your local FM stations. We are also available on the medium waves, 909 kilohertz and 1530 kilohertz. Our short waves are 6080, 15580, 4930, 15165, 15580, and 17530 kilohertz. VOA Africa, your trusted source for news and information.
Thousands of Senegalese took to the streets yesterday to watch the first military parade in Dakar since COVID-19 pandemic began. Reuters says soldiers clapped and sang as tanks drove down a central boulevard during the Independence Day event. The news service notes the show of patriotism came just weeks after political tensions led to violent confrontations between security forces and opposition supporters. Protests have arisen over the past year over concerns that President Macky Sall may try to seek a third term. Security forces clashed last week with supporters of opposition leader Ousmane Sonko, who was sentenced in a court case for libel.
Hello, this is Heather Maxwell, host of Music.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Douglas Impuga in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent, 24/7, visit our website at voafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbu Yebro, and our engineer, Nelson Lopes, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.